Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Know How is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/knowhow. And by IT Pro TV, flexible and entertaining training for your IT career. Visit itpro.tv/knowhow and use the code KNOWHOW30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. Today on Know How, IoT in the enterprise on a voyage to find out what is it used for. Welcome to Know How, IoT. I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Florence Ion.
This is a show where we tell you
this
everything.
Is a show.
It is a show. We hope it's going to be a show. We've done our best to make this show all about IoT, Internet of Things. 12 weeks. Right now, we're somewhere in the middle of that.
Yeah, we are. We're through the halfway mark.
Yeah, this is the halfway
mark. We're about to hit the season. What is it, the preseason? I don't know. I wish I had my TV lingo down for today's episode. Whoops.
Yes, but we are here and we're going to talk
sweeps.
About...
Sweeps.
Yeah.
That's what they're
sweeps.
Called.
Yes. So before we get to today's topic, I wanted to tell you an IoT story.
Oh, yes, please.
As you know, if you watched my smart home tour, mm-hmm. I have an internet-connected coffee maker.
You do.
Beemore. It's lovely. I can turn it on with my watch. I get notified by my watch when the coffee's ready. It also automatically can order more coffee. It has gone rogue.
Uh-oh. What happened?
It just keeps ordering more coffee, even though I've told it to stop. I like the coffee, but I have too much
of it.
It orders it from Amazon, and I know I did stop the order, and then more came today.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. So this is when IoT certainly goes wrong.
Yes, exactly. So today's topic is going to be IoT in the enterprise, mm-hmm. retail, healthcare, industry supply chain. So it's like really funny when like you have five bags of coffee and you're the only one in your house that needs coffee. But in businesses and enterprise, IoT mishaps are not so funny anymore.
No, they are not.
No.
A lot more. I mean... There's a lot at stake for Megan receiving boxes and boxes of coffee, but there's a lot more at stake when it involves a company of 15 employees.
Yes, or 50 or 1,000.
Or even three, because that's two other people who have to deal with it.
Well, in that sense, then it would be better because there'd be more people drinking the coffee.
That's also true.
So we're going to talk to two people today, two experts, two IoT in the enterprise experts, one from the iOS perspective and one from the Android perspective. We'll also talk a little bit about Microsoft mm-hmm. as well. So our first guest manages IT for a private school, and he also writes for 9to5 Mac, and he recently wrote a piece about how HomeKit might be the answer to enterprise IoT woes.
Interesting.
So we got you to talk to you. Bradley Chambers, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Always glad to be back. And, you know, IoT is something I've been kind of passionate about for a while, specifically in the enterprise, because I've seen the pain points of it. And I was dealing with the pain points before I'd ever even heard that term IoT. I'll give you a good little backstory. So I've been at my school since 2009. And when I came here, we had just gotten this commercial HVAC controller system. Mm-hmm. It was a $100,000 system. But it cut $5,000 a month off our power bill. I mean, our building is 100,000 square feet, and it gave us the ability to heat and control certain rooms on a schedule or on demand. And obviously saving $5,000 a month on a power bill, you can imagine what our power bill is in the summer. But the problem with it is, it's like the interface is absolutely garbage, and it was a Java-based system, and we're just now getting it upgraded to not be on Java. I mean, this is almost a decade later. And when I would examine the firewalls for this thing, I realized it was getting pinged from overseas all the time, because I've got to open up off-site so our folks can manage the HVAC remotely. And I've just become to, as we've studied IoT more, I've realized this is going to be a great thing for the enterprise, but it's also going to be terrible for the enterprise.
So we actually started off this episode talking about the fact that we want to figure out more. What does it mean, IoT in the enterprise? And I feel like you kind of just answered it for us. It basically sounds like it's IoT at a larger scale. So instead of just my little townhouse in the burbs, it's a 100,000 square foot school, lots of children and teachers, all of whom would like to have a nice temperature to study in. And so I guess that's where IoT would be really efficient, and also to help save money, which, as we know, is very important in this day.
Yeah, and you know, I'm thinking of things like paper towel holders in the restroom,
yeah,
where it can send a sensor to the maintenance staff, hey, this is 30% used, or this is 10%, has 10% left. Obviously, then things you don't even think about, CCTV systems. Those are IoT devices. And so I really think of IoT as anything that's on the network that's not an end-user device. And that, honestly, is becoming more and more and more. The problem with it is the folks who are buying it are often not IT. And so like at our school, it's a lot of the facilities folks are buying it. So again, go back to the HVAC controller. Mm-hmm. And IT is just expected to, hey, get this stuff online. Like, you know, I don't get to often talk to these folks ahead of time about the security. And the problem is a lot of these companies don't even know the security themselves. Like they're maybe reselling something. And so this, like, all they know is like this thing has a network port and they need an internal static IP address. And so it's like IT is like, what is this thing doing on my network? But you've just got to make it work. And that's where I kind of thought about HomeKit for the enterprise, because we were in this boat in the home not too long ago, where there's no centralized platform. Everything is just a web server that you got to get on. No one knows what it's doing on your network. And now you've got HomeKit, you've got Google Assistant, you've got Amazon. You've got these platforms these companies can build upon. So I feel confident as a consumer that, like, hey, I'm buying this stuff. It all works with HomeKit, but it also works with Google Assistant. So I could switch in the future. And I really think Apple could have an opportunity there. And they've got some partnerships with IBM and Cisco to build a HomeKit for the enterprise. Like, let's find a standardized platform that we can work with security, we can work on ease of access, and let's build that for the enterprise. And then, as an IT person, if that was there, I could, say to our facilities folks, hey, anything you buy, I'm not putting it on the network unless it's certified to work with HomeKit, because that's how I can trust the security. That's how I know what it's doing. And I think we're just at this spot where everybody wants it, but then we have this hodgepodge of protocols and ways to access.
So I think that HomeKit isn't necessarily known for the enterprise yet. There is no, like, work kit yet.
It's pretty new. It's pretty new to the market.
Well, HomeKit.
is new to
the market. And slow to the market. Apple people will, like myself and you, will argue because they, are making their products more secure and making sure everything works. But how hard of a sell do you think this will be for the enterprise?
Well, there's a lot of money to be made here, I think. And I think Apple's going to have to obviously come up with a work kit program, and then they're going to have to go to manufacturers and do the selling on their end. Like, hey, you build in WorkKit or HomeKit for the enterprise, and it's going to be easier to sell your products, because then you don't have to – IT doesn't have to worry about, what things are doing on the network. There's a level of control that Apple would provide. Again, if I have to put an Apple TV at every campus to allow it to work offsite, that's fine. That's obviously fine. So I don't know. Yeah, I think Apple, if they were committed to it, would have to go and sell to the Honeywells and the big players in the IoT industry. But I think there's a lot of money that could be had.
I think that's true. So Apple actually joined the Thread Group last week, which I believe Google, and I mean that was the Qualcomm initiative, if I'm not mistaken. So, like, what do you make of that? Why join in that? Is that just to add to the universality? I hope I said that word correctly.
it's hard to know Apple's motives there. Obviously, they're in the business of selling Macs and iPads and iPhones into the enterprise environment. And Apple probably doesn't get enough credit for how stable their devices are with enterprise Wi-Fi. I mean, people think that, like, your home Wi-Fi is similar to, like, enterprise Wi-Fi. And there are just so many more challenges in the enterprise. And I'll say the majority of problems like I see with enterprise networks with Wi-Fi have nothing to do with the network, but it's clients and it's bad client drivers. It's outdated client drivers. And Apple does a good job here keeping their clients up to date, because regardless of what's wrong on the network or if it's a client problem, if the Wi-Fi doesn't work, people just assume it's a Wi-Fi problem. But in reality, it's always like a client problem. It's not even like it doesn't work, but maybe it doesn't roam, you know, correctly. Again, in your home, you may have like a Google Wi-Fi system that has 3 access points. Roaming's not a problem. Well, in my building, I've got 45 because we have 100,000 square feet. So if I have roaming problems, that can be a big deal. But the clients control when they roam. And so, I don't know, you know, Apple's motives here. Are they just wanting to be good players here and be good in the enterprise? Because obviously that's a big part of their business. But I'd like to think they have opportunities to do more. And because I do think that, you know, in the next decade, I'll definitely have more non-end-user devices on the network than I have actual end-user devices. I mean, everything is coming on the network, whether it's water fountains, it's, again, paper towel dispensers. You could even do toilet paper dispensers. You know, that all that's going to go into the facilities group. It's going to make their lives easier and to make themselves smarter.
So it's almost like you need like an IT person for the facilities group.
IoT.
Or they just have to be involved in that conversation. And again, that goes back to where a WorkKit program could be, you know, could do well. Because if you said, hey, we're a work, you know, our network is operated and we're suited for, you know, WorkKit from Apple or HomeKit for the enterprise, then you can go to, you know, if there's a couple bids on HVAC controllers and they bring in IT to talk about it, it's like, well, if one supports WorkKit, that's the one we're choosing because that's what we use security-wise. And because it's like at some point these things are on the network and IT has to be involved in the discussion of the security of it, because just getting on the network doesn't make it safe. You know, you have to have a way to control it and to manage it and to see what it's doing. And ultimately, one of the big things with IoT is to upgrade it. A lot of this stuff was not built to be upgraded. You know, we had, multiple WPA2 vulnerabilities that, you know, last year that were patched and cracked by most people. But this IoT stuff, like, you don't always have a way to update it. And maybe there are no software updates. And you know, we had somebody at our office say, hey, I wanted to add a little camera in my office for, I'd seen some stuff missing. Would you have a problem if I put that on the guest Wi-Fi? And I said, what are you putting on there? They said the Arlo from Netgear. It's like, that's fine. You know, I'm much more comfortable with an Arlo camera from Netgear than I am a $30 camera that I have no idea what it's doing. It's running a little web server.
What about the Wyze camera? Because it's only $25.
Have you heard of the Wyze camera?
And apparently, it's not that bad because Stacey Higginbotham has put it on her list of. Mm-hmm.
But your point is that it's something known rather than something unknown.
Right. And I just I'm always fearful about what these things are doing on the network. Again, I can buy a device from Apple and I kind of have a good idea of what it's doing, but a random camera from Amazon, I don't always know. And I don't know where is it phoning home to? There is no little snitch app, you know, that you have on the Mac for these little cameras to know, like, is this thing pinging another foreign country? What are these things doing? And that's the things I worry about with this gear. As we start putting more and more and more of it on the network, how do I know what it's doing? How do I know where it's talking to?
Especially in a school, right? Because you've got children, other people's children running around, and that's like a whole security and a whole ethics thing.
Right, absolutely.
I'm sure.
Absolutely. You just want to, you know, my big thing is I just want to know what devices are doing and to be able to see what they're doing and to see what they're accessing and to see where they're being accessed from. And we're just at a place with IoT and the enterprise where I've not seen a centralized system. And that's ultimately what we need, a centralized system where, whether it's the HVAC controller, whether it's a thermometer, temperature, thermostat, whether it's a paper towel dispenser, I need a centralized platform that I can kind of guide our folks to buy under. And then it's easy to manage as well. And, upgrade. You know, these things, if they're on the Wi-Fi, let's say I go to change out, a pre-share key. How hard are these things to get back online? You know, it can be difficult.
I'm impressed that they asked you if they could put the camera on the network. You got them trained well.
Yeah.
He had already done it.
he asked for forgiveness, not for permission.
And again, it was an Arlo, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the ideal thing. But again, it's better than a $20 one from, you know, Amazon, where I have zero idea what it's doing. That's always my fear, is I just don't know what this stuff's doing or where it's talking to.
I just think it's interesting that we're talking about IoT in the enterprise, but we are talking about essentially things that you can go to Walmart and Best Buy and buy off the shelves. And these are still, I mean, these things are enterprise quality. They're built so that you can DIY them to scale. And I'm really fascinated by the fact that, you know, now I know when I'm writing articles, I'm not just writing to people in their homes. I'm also writing to people like you who are installing these things at a much larger scale.
Well, yeah, because it's like it's one thing, like let's say, you know, this go back to his camera example. Mm-hmm. It's one thing if he buys one camera, but if he says, hey, I want to put 30 of these around my office, or or if like we have one paper towel dispenser that has the Wi-Fi built in, that's okay. One, that's fine. What happens when we have 50? How do you manage it? Yeah. How do you update them? How do you control them? And like, you know, I always think about things at scale, because there's a big difference in like how you do one thing versus how you do like a school wide mm-hmm. thing. And we had a teacher that was like, I was thinking about putting like a Google Assistant in my classroom. And I'm thinking, I don't need, like, how would that work if two people wanted to do that? Do they somehow see each other on the network? Like, I don't know how that works. And again, it's when you're in your one classroom, that's fine. It's when you go to 30 or 40 classrooms that I start worrying, like, what are these things doing? How are they talking to each other? Does having multiple of them on the same network under different accounts, does that impact things at all? Again, I go back to, we need centralization and scalability on these devices.
What about cost, though? Because Apple is not known for low cost.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing about the enterprise is cost is not always the determining factor. Mm-hmm. Again, we spent $100,000 on an HVAC controller to save $5,000 a month. It more than has paid for itself. And you go back to, again, like let's say you could have these paper towel dispensers. Maybe they cost 20% more with the ones in Wi-Fi, but then you can show, hey, we were able to like, you know, have, you know, one less person. Somebody you know, leaves and retires, you don't have to replace them because you're not having to constantly check all the paper towel dispensers. You can know whether they need to be replaced or not. There probably is cost with these things, but there could be some automation opportunities as well.
You could find out what kids are hanging out in the bathroom and playing, making paper towel stickies, which is when you get all the paper towels out and wet it and then throw it on the roof.
Where the long-term thing could be is like, let's say you got eye beacons in the bathroom and you could tell whose iPad was in there. Then it's like you could take your friend's iPad and get him in trouble.
Right. Well, it's better than cameras in the bathroom, though.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's cameras are a big thing of centralization. Now obviously we've gone through like RG6 cameras with a DVR and moved on to IP cameras, but now you're really seeing enterprise cameras with Wi-Fi built in as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, Wi-Fi technology has come to a spot to where it can handle that bandwidth. Like we've got a great enterprise network from Aerohive Networks here, all 11 AC Wave 2. Our network can handle that kind of bandwidth. Where 5-6 years ago you wouldn't think about putting 1080p cameras on Wi-Fi, and now it's like, bring it on. Let's see what we can do with this thing.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask, so you mentioned Google, a Google Home being in a classroom. Mm-hmm. What are teachers use? I'm very curious. Are they using it to, like, teach? I mean, do you know? inquired?
I told her I wanted to think about it before we activated it. I just needed to think through how that worked. I mean, it's one thing when it's in your home and it's listening just you, but when it's, like, in your classroom listening, Hold on, I need to like talk to our school leadership about that. But I imagine it could be things like starting timers. Teachers do that a lot, or just quick lookups. There's part of me that thinks like that could be a thing one day. It could be a teacher assistant.
That's why I'm very curious. I'm really into the idea, especially because Amazon and Google in particular are really designing these things to work with children and to interact with children. So.
Yeah, I had an article for 9to5 Mac maybe a month or so ago about, could HomePod have a place in the classroom? I mean, obviously it needs to be lower cost, but I'm not ready to say yes, but I need to have a long view of technology. Yeah, maybe next year, but probably not. But like in 10 years, could that be a really good kind of teacher assistant to be able to, students ask questions to, start timers, even things like, hey, cylinder, mark everybody is present here today. Mm-hmm. Just things like that teachers now have to open up their computer and mark everybody as present in the system. Maybe a future Google Home or Amazon or HomePod has hooks into your school's management system, and you can do your attendance from there. Or, you go back to, hey, cylinder, call the school office and tell them so-and-so sick. And that triggers a whole sort of, there's a lot of opportunities there. But yeah, we'll see the long game on that and who wins. I think the key is going to be low cost. I think Amazon and Google have the right idea with $50 devices, because I think anything more than that, then you've just priced yourself out of the game.
That are constantly being tossed out for free with every purchase of a new one.
Right. Again, it goes back to, if I'm in IT, I want to be able to centrally manage all those Alexas. And I want to be able to, you know, deploy those. And, you know, Apple's done that with Apple TV, where you can centrally manage your those devices through your MDM, like we use Jamf here at Head School. And you can enroll those in them just like you can iOS. So I can push out configurations to them. Like we have our lobby signage running off of Apple TVs here. And it's a web-based interface with a company called KitKast. And it's just an app on the Apple TVs. And you start it up and it starts playing the slides. But, yeah, you can easily manage all your Apple TVs through your MDM. Now, I think that was like iOS 11 is when that came out.
Well, your school is so lucky to have you.
I want to go to your school. I imagine also being a teacher there is fun because you don't have to deal with, I would like to not deal with a laptop. I mean, it would be great to just have a little voice interface in the classroom that you can interact with. That way you can keep your eye on the kids.
That's true. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I always think about, like, what's the future of, like, computing in the classroom? And I really think everybody talks about, like, you know, Chromebooks versus iPads. You know, is it the tablet versus the laptop? Honestly, I think the future should be either. I think what I really want is I want to carry my phone. And I want to have like a docking station next to a big monitor. And I walk into my office and I dock it next to that. And then I want like Mac OS. And then when I go home, I want a tablet that I dock my phone into and it becomes an iPad. Like I want one device with that can be multiple form factors. And I think that's honestly what teachers want, because there are times like an iPad is better. And there are times a laptop form factor is better. It's like, why do we have to, like, I wonder if in like 20 years we'll look back and the fact that we carried three devices and like laugh at that in a way. It's just the same way like we laughed about carrying a cell phone, a digital camera, and an MP3 player. Like, you know, these should just all be like my phone is more powerful than the computer I had like, you know, 5 years ago. So what does the next 10 years bring?
Wow, I am like so excited to see this. Thank you for ramping up our excitement about I'm super into it, because, you know, back when the iPad came out, there was a big discussion around it being used in schools. And so now that I've taken it in, you know, we've taken in this interest in IoT, now I'm like super fascinated how this is going to propagate outside of the home.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating, and those kids sound like they're gonna have some fun in their education.
Well, I'll say one thing to wrap up that thing about the iPad, and I'll tell you where the iPad still struggles, and I've seen this after being an iPad user since day one. We've had them in our school since day one. I manage, you know, hundreds of them. The single biggest problem with the iPad versus the laptop is two things. Number one, it is not great ergonomically to sit in front of an iPad for 6 hours at a time, like if you're a you know, desk worker. Number two, the iPad needs a trackpad with a cursor. That is, I think, fundamentally where I still struggle, especially with web-based interfaces. There are things that are just like, you know, let's say, for example, I wanted to update our school website. I could do that on an iPad. It takes about four times as long. Mm-hmm. But if I had a cursor on the iPad, it's a breeze. And I think it goes back to, we need the full version of Safari on the iPad and not the mobile version. I need trackpad support on the iPad. And if I had that with a cursor, you know, adios Mac OS for me.
Well, Bradley, thank you so much taking the time to join us. Bradley Chambers is IT director at a school and a freelancer at 9to5 Mac. And you're Bradley Chambers on Twitter. And in addition to all of your insights, you also are good at evaluating people's home screen on their iPhone and letting them know that they're a hot mess, as you said to me.
Everyone is wrong but mine. That's the only thing. Like, mine is right. Everybody else is garbage. That's how I'll end that.
All right. Thanks so much. Take care, Bradley.
Thanks so much, Bradley.
So I want to take a break for a minute to thank one of our sponsors, WordPress. Now, WordPress, you might have heard about it. You've probably been to many, many WordPress sites. I run my website, meganmaroney.com, on WordPress. I don't really have time to update it, but it's pretty easy. I updated it over the weekend, just added that little video there because I thought, you know, gotta keep updated all my content. And I love it. And Florence also runs her website on WordPress as well. And, you know, that's, you said you hadn't updated in a while, but it's not that. Is that 2018?
Yes.
That's pretty good. I mean, there's no such thing as daily blogging anymore.
No, but see, with WordPress, you can get those little cute widgets, like on the side. I got my little Twitter widget on the side.
I too have my Twitter.
And embedded a calendar in there so you can see my upcoming events.
Mm-hmm. On WordPress.com, you can choose from hundreds of designs to match your vision and also to establish your brand, no matter how much design experience you have. It's hassle-free. WordPress takes care of the hosting. They take care of the security, the software updates. That way you can focus on your site. You don't have to worry about, oh, is it insecure? Is it insecure? They're taking care of that. You can upload images, video, audio, and more, plus import and export content to and from your WordPress website. As you saw on my site, I just uploaded all the videos that are on YouTube. Super easy. It's your site, your home, your content. You can grow your audience and reach new customers with built-in SEO. We were joking about how nobody daily blogs anymore, but you can. I mean, you know, it's makes it look pretty, not like your old-fashioned blog. Social media, as we said, we both have our Twitter feed running along the side. You can have Instagram. Then there's just other marketing tools that you can use. And I often use the WordPress app. And that way, like if I'm standing in line at the grocery store, I just, you know, waiting to pick up my kids from soccer, I can just manage my site on the go. And you can also launch your website with confidence, knowing that you can get help with a 24/7 support team when you need it. And this is the best part. Plans start at just $4 a month, which is really inexpensive. And I don't know if you knew this, but 31% of all websites run on WordPress. It's totally easy to use. If you have a vision, they can put that vision online for you. Right now, they are offering 15% off any new plan purchase. All you have to do is go to wordpress.com/knowhow to create your website. Everyone's always talking about, oh, I need a site, I need a website. You can create one, and it's super easy. If you have bought a domain, you can use it. I have MeganMaroney.com. I also have Goats Wearing Clothes. So if you go to GoatsWearingClothes.com, that redirects to MeganMaroney.com.
Oh.
So someday when I build my website that is really about goats wearing clothes, then I will have that website.
Is that your Sonoma retirement plan?
Yes. Actually, it was just one of those times where you were like, it would be great to create a site that was just devoted to goats wearing clothes.
Yeah.
I haven't actually done it, but I have it there, and it's there waiting. So maybe that'll be a weekend project for me. Mm-hmm. So go to wordpress.com/knowhow. Don't forget the know-how. That's how they know that we sent you. You can get 15% off your new website, wordpress.com/knowhow. And we thank know-how for their support of this show.
Our guest is no stranger to the Twit Network. Let us please introduce Kevin Toefel, who I know very much from the internet. But Kevin's also been on several Twitch shows here in the network.
And IoT podcast
with Stacey Higginbotham, as well as founder of About Chromebooks, which I am an avid reader of because not that many people talk about Chromebooks these days. Hi, Kevin.
And that's why I started the site, yes.
Yes, and I really appreciate that because, as you see, on the same train. Mm-hmm.
There we go. Pixelbook forever.
See, different train.
Very different train. Her train is proprietary. Hers is very open.
Boo.
So we talked about sort of the idea of perhaps HomeKit in the enterprise.
Yeah.
And we wanted to talk to you about the Android side of IoT in the enterprise and the Google side of IoT in the enterprise. And I guess my first question is, like, are those different, Google IoT and Android IoT for the enterprise?
Well, it's funny you ask that question because on the IoT podcast some time ago, Stacey and I were chatting about what is Google's IoT strategy? What's the cohesive story? And we keep saying this every 6 months, and we still don't really have one, in my opinion. It's getting better. I know that at the Google Cloud Next, they announced a whole bunch of IoT stuff. They started Android things at 2015 in Google I/O, so it's been 3 years, but really, we're just now seeing the first Android Things devices. Two shows ago, you guys were talking about the Lenovo Smart Display. That is an Android Things device, for example. But there aren't too many other ones. So if I'm an enterprise guy, which I was a long time ago for about 15 years, I don't know that I'm going to turn to Google first for IoT. I may for cloud or some other services, maybe machine learning or analytics. But Microsoft and Amazon are the bigger players here, in my opinion.
Interesting. So you think that Google has some catching up to do?
I do, because it's taken them such a long time to flesh out the story. They all have similar services available so they can manage devices, so that they could provide production boards so you can prototype devices and so on and so forth. But for as open as Google is trying to get their services on just about everything, they're still a little closed off when it comes to IoT. Android Things, for example, there's only about 4 production boards that you can prototype with, whereas Amazon has, like, last I checked, was like 18. And they all have hardware partners, and many of them are the same hardware partners, but it seems like there's more choice with Amazon, and they just want to say, hey, get whatever board you want and work with our services. And Microsoft's a totally different story, because I remember, and this goes back a ways, don't laugh, back in the late 90s, Microsoft had Windows CE, and they actually had an embedded version of that for devices.
What?
So they've been in this space for a long time, and they are right now the top cloud provider, not just for general enterprise, but also for IoT. And Google has some catching up to do. Amazon's number 2 in this space. So Google's number 3, and they got some catching up to do.
I feel like this is a good time to ask. So last week on the IoT podcast with Stacey, you both talked about the enterprise and how it's sort of IoT sort of stalled in this space. Can you talk a little bit more about that? And is it related to the fact that companies like Google maybe aren't being as open to the rest of the world of IoT as it stands?
Yeah. First thing, I'm glad somebody listens to that podcast.
Oh, yeah. Every week.
Second thing, we kind of both agree on that, because when you're in enterprise, it's a lot different than the consumer space, right? In the consumer space, you go to a store and you're like, hey, that Echo speaker looks cool. That camera looks great. You spend a few $100. It's not an impulse purchase, but you're not having to sit through a PowerPoint with a 9-month strategy plan to figure out how we're going to IoT our enterprise and so on, and we're going to spend millions of dollars. It's a totally different beast. And just to put that into context, I think Amazon has sold a rumored 50,000 Echo devices, it was 50 million, I apologize, 50 million. You figure at most that's about $5 billion in hardware sales, because I'm guessing about $100 a piece. $5 billion sounds like a lot of money. But last week, there was a report out from Bond, a research agency. They said enterprise IoT spending last year was $240 billion, and it's projected to double or more by 2021. So that $5 billion doesn't sound so big anymore when you compare consumer and enterprise, right? Secondly, enterprise is different because it's all about the numbers to them. What's the ROI? What's the return on investment? If I spend X million or billion dollars on putting sensors on everything, what's my payback? How am I going to make that money back? You know, how am I going to take that data and make more money with it? And that is a big process for enterprises. It's not a kind of overnight exercise as it might be with a consumer, you know, and as a result, the whole enterprise or industrial IoT market is not a flip a switch and turn it on and all of a sudden we've got millions and billions in sales. This is going to take a long time. And that's kind of why we feel it's stalled, because there were a lot of early entrants in enterprise and industrial, and there is growth there. But a lot of folks are still trying to figure out, what does it all mean? What can I do? What do I get out of it?
When I think of the growth of computers, I think of, you know, they started often in the workplace, in the enterprise, and then they moved into the home. But it does seem like IoT is going the other way. I mean, or is that just the way I'm seeing it because I'm more involved in the stuff in my home? Like, do you see a lot of devices, IoT, home devices that would really be much better suited for the enterprise?
Well, I think that's a fair point and point of view, because again, most of these devices for the home are relatively inexpensive. You can go get a sensor for $20 or a webcam for $20 or a button that turns your lights on, off, whatever you want to program for $15, $20. You know, and then you have your other voice speakers and so on up to $250. So in a sense, when you think back to the computer industry, everything was thousands and thousands of dollars. And it wasn't until the prices came down that we saw it move from enterprise to consumer. This is the other way. I agree with you. There are some devices that would be, I think, very useful in enterprise that are available on the consumer market today. There was a company, I forget the name of it, but we had talked about it on an IoT podcast a couple months back. They're creating skills for the Amazon Echo to be used in the enterprise. Mm-hmm. So people on a help desk, for example, can just use their voice to open up a service ticket or get the status of a ticket. So there is definitely some room in enterprise for those types of things. And there's gazillions of sensors out there. A lot of production lines have sensors and so on. They're probably not the exact same as we buy in the stores today, but same concept. The issue, though, I think, and the difference is, in enterprises, they all want to keep their own data. Mm. And this is a large reason why you don't see support on, say, the Google Home for Google Apps accounts, which businesses use, because they can't really aggregate all that data, anonymize it and all that, to the point where companies are happy and comfortable with that. So there's a lot of data issues in the enterprise that consumers don't face. Certainly we face data issues and privacy and security issues in consumer just as enterprise, but the data itself has a lot to do with it. And a perfect example, again, Cloud Next, Google announced that Target just moved all their IoT stuff to Google. Where was it before? It was on AWS and Amazon. Mm. Why did they switch it? You can tell me, you can guess. What's the similarity between Amazon and Target?
They sell things.
Bingo.
Oh, so they're competitors, they of course.
From a data perspective and a retail perspective, they are competitors.
Yeah.
So even though there are you know, walls in place and NDAs and contracts, Target probably wasn't comfortable with that and decided, let's get it off there.
Interesting. Okay, in terms of security, then, on that note, you know, jumping sort of to security, is one particular platform more secure than the other for the enterprise, like Google/Android Things, let's just say, versus Amazon versus Apple? And also, is there a giant differentiation between Android Things and Google Assistant for the people at home?
Sure. Well, I'll tackle the second one first. Yeah, no, because it's an easy one.
Yeah.
So Android Things, from my understanding, is basically a subset of Android itself. All the things you wouldn't need for a phone or tablet device are kind of stripped out, or the APIs for those devices aren't available in Android Things. That slims the software down so you can put it on devices with much less memory, like 32 to 64 meg of memory. Our phones have like 4, 6, 8 gig of memory for Android. So that's a key difference. I believe that Android Things can connect with the Google Assistant services. I'm not 100% sure on that, but it wouldn't surprise me if they could. That would be useful, say, for a home hub, for example, running on Android Things. Now, as far as security, you know, I mean, Microsoft has, you know, its Windows platform. Amazon uses something called Free RTOS, which it actually bought within the past, I think, 6 months or so. I don't have the exact date. That's a really small microkernel or a software platform to run Android IoT devices. We're talking kilobytes of storage, not megabytes. And then Google has Android Things. They all have the pros and cons with security, but one key one, if I was an enterprise, I would want to know, how long do I get support for my IoT devices? This is another part where Google falls a little short, in my opinion. Microsoft recently said, we're going to give you 10 years of updates, software, security, et cetera. Google came out with their commitment, and they said, we'll give you 3.
Just like the Android phones?
Just like Android phones. It's a different market.
You're right to react,
because if you're going to spend tens of millions or more in the enterprise, you don't want long-term support to end after 36 months. It may take you 12 to 18 months just to roll something out. I mean, that's just not good, and you can't have a consumer policy on enterprise devices. That's something Google, I think, needs to change.
Cannot be as much as the phones, because a phone you will get rid of in 2 years, but a motion sensor, whatever, just to offer an example, I mean, I'm going to buy it. I'm hoping to keep it around for a couple years because it costs money. They don't have endless supplies.
Right. It costs money. And most of the newer motion sensors or cameras that you might see a year or two or three from now, they're not going to be that much different.
Yeah,
sure, they may have higher resolution. They may have facial recognition, but that could be added with software. So really, a webcam is a webcam is a webcam when it comes to this kind of stuff, for the most part.
Especially in 2018,
Yeah, exactly. So they need to address that. So I think their security platforms are pretty much on par, but the support is an issue, the long-term support.
So it's interesting that you bring up Microsoft and Amazon, because Amazon really has succeeded in this space where they failed miserably in, like, the smart homes, you know, smartphone space, or the, you know, they have tablets, but, you know, their phone failed. And Microsoft is, as you're saying, doing very well in the enterprise IoT. They have, you know, great support, like you mentioned, and Microsoft behind them, but they haven't done so well in the home, like the Cortana, unless you're like all in on the, you know, the Windows ecosystem. Not that many people use Cortana, and it's not compatible with a whole lot of things. Why do you think that Amazon has succeeded in this space, and as well as Microsoft succeeded in this space, like as they have?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think for a couple reasons, quite honestly. Amazon started with the consumer focus first, which gets back to our point earlier that this is more of a bottom-up approach with consumer to enterprise versus the other way around. They made this technology, the voice assistants, very accessible. I mean, anybody could use an Echo device without much training. And I've always said, this goes back to when Siri was introduced, I said voice is the invisible interface. You don't need to see it. You don't need to really learn how to use it if it's done right. It's just there and it works. So Amazon perfected that out of the gate back in late 2014, I think it was, when the first Echo device came out. Microsoft, they have struggled on the home side, and that's because the products from their competitors are very strong. And it's only recently that they've had Cortana speakers come out. They have since added Cortana to Windows. They've added actually Cortana to iOS and Android as well. I don't know many people that use it, but they have tried to get it out in front of, you know, billions of people. It just may take some time there because, again, there's established players here and they've got to do something better. But from an enterprise standpoint, again, working there, I was in a Windows IT shop for 15 years at a Fortune 100 company. It was all Microsoft, and anything you did, you had to look at Microsoft solutions first because of the compatibility. And they have done a great job in enterprise with their Microsoft Azure Cloud Services, which is where all this IoT data goes for analytics and processing. And if a company's already using Windows and Azure, it makes a lot of sense in the enterprise. I don't know many consumers that are using Azure, so that's, again, they don't really have a foothold in the home door yet.
Yes, every time I hear Azure, I go, oh, yes, enterprise. I do have a question about just consumer devices in relation to the enterprise. So, you know, we're talking about the stuff that you can buy at the store. Is there stuff there that works for large scale? Like, what should people be looking at if you're the person who's in charge of doing this for your business, or so to speak?
Sure, sure. I mean, like I said before, a webcam is a webcam is a webcam for the most part. So you could, I think, get away with buying some store-bought webcams for an enterprise. I wouldn't say, you know, thousands and thousands of them, because it's not so much the device at that point. It's actually how are you managing them and, you know, what kind of hubs are you using? And I really haven't seen many what I'll call enterprise type hubs for this. I'm sure they exist, but I'm more of a consumer guy as opposed to Stacey on the podcast, who's an enterprise person or an industrial person. So I will say that what I would do is I would look at what's in the store, and I would take a look at, depending on my platform, what are the management services provided by my Microsoft, my Amazon, Google. They all have something that will help you roll out and manage devices, just like they have to manage computers and Chromebooks and tablets. So that whole management piece is there. Will it work with every single consumer device on the market? Probably not, because there are certain protocols that they want to have to support for security reasons and others. But I'd say a good place to start is probably not with the devices in the stores, but see what devices your console platform to manage devices actually supports.
So when we were chatting with Bradley Chambers, we were talking about, it said one of the pain points of managing this stuff at a large scale is that there's no centralized way to manage it all. There's no way to make sure that everything is constantly updated, and that sort of thing, which, again, makes it a little frustrating to kind of install at scale. And that's why he said HomeKit makes sense for him. Do you agree, disagree? I mean, what, I guess, do you have advice for people who might be in this situation who aren't really interested in, like, the Apple way of things?
Sure. For the enterprise, there actually are tools to do this. I forget what each of them call it. I believe Windows is IoT Core. Google has something else, Core. I would say hit up the IoT or the cloud site for each one of those three main competitors, and you'll see that they had management consoles that you could deploy, update, you can disable. There's tons of features there. It's not something I do anymore, so I don't have hands-on with it, but I know those tools exist. So I would say you definitely want to check out those sites if you're thinking about IoT in the enterprise, for sure.
Interesting. It sounds like cloud is key to all of this.
Yeah.
Like the strength of the cloud is the strength of the IoT in the enterprise, in which case I don't know how well HomeKit would do because, I mean, their strength is nothing is in the cloud.
Right. You could certainly use HomeKit in the home. I do here. I have pretty much every platform running. I have three voice assistants in this room, so I can't say certain words, obviously, or they start arguing with each other. But if you have, maybe if you have a small home office and you want to go HomeKit, sure, I could see that. I don't know that it's really equipped for, say, a large-scale enterprise. That could just be my ignorance and not knowing that they, too, have, say, a HomeKit cloud management tool for enterprise. I don't know on the enterprise side. But I would say, you know, you wouldn't have to have all Apple devices in your office. It would just be the HomeKit devices themselves.
Right.
It could work in a mixed environment for sure. But you're right, the cloud is a big part of it. And my opinion, Apple's the weakest in this when it comes to getting data from IoT devices, which really that's what it's all about. It's so that you don't have to like physically watch something to see how many times something goes through the production line. You want sensors, you want cameras, you want NFC tags of people going in and out of doors. Is a conference room being used right now when it was scheduled to be used? Maybe not, because I can see the lights are off and the video camera's not on. So I know it's available now. It's all about the data, and that is all in the cloud. So analytics, machine learning, predictive logic, that's what you're going to be looking for in the enterprise.
I know back in May you wrote that Android, with the question, will Android be a big player in the enterprise, ask you in 2019, but we are not patient enough to wait until 2019.
We're more than halfway through this year.
So why 2019? What are we waiting for in terms of Android in the enterprise IoT?
Well, I think I said something similar in 2017 about waiting for 2018, and that didn't happen because it really wasn't until this Google I.O. back in May of 2018 that Android Things really had a presentation on the keynote, right? They had the target person there. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, and now again, we just saw the first consumer devices with Android Things with the Lenovo smart display and JBL's smart display, which is also available, also runs Android Things. So, yeah, it's just taking so long. I've been waiting for this story to be told in a compelling way from end to end with Google, and I didn't see it last year. And that's when I'm like, well, let's see what happens next year. I heard a lot more of it this year. So now I feel like, okay, this is like driving a super tanker. In an enterprise, you don't just make a turn on a dime. You turn the wheel and you wait 6 to 12 months before real change happens. So that's kind of where I said 2019 maybe, because it just takes so long. I think Google's placed themselves quiet. I said the G
word.
Yeah,
I heard that.
Yeah, see what I mean?
Only once is good.
No,
that's
you don't
good
even need
that's,
to. Yeah, you just say the G word and it does that.
Yeah, the HomePod didn't hear the S word, which is also good. So it's just going to take some time for people to adopt Google, whereas they're already involved with Microsoft and Amazon in this space now and have been. So, you know, they did tell a compelling story and they're starting to have the platform to support it. So now we need to see enterprises embrace it.
I was going to say, I just wonder if Google's taking a similar approach to Android Things as it did with Android apps, in the sense that, hey, developers, here it is, help us make something, you know, sort of thing.
That is very typical of Google external, and having worked there for 18 months, it's also internal that way. You know, let's see what sticks. Let's use 20% time and you know, but that's how Gmail was created. That's how Chrome OS was created. So there have been some great products and services coming out of that approach. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, those were, I would say, more game changing, as opposed to now people have to come up with Google solutions that compete with existing products.
Yep.
It's very different. And they're very similar products. That's the other thing. How do you radically change IoT? I don't know. I mean, if I did, I'd be a billionaire. But Google's got to figure that out if they want to really stand out. Or they, again, as Florence, as you said, they've got to just put the platform out there and say, developers, come to us, help us build this. And that's kind of what they've done. And I'm not sure that's the best approach for this space, especially in the enterprise. Enterprises have so much to deal with. They're like, I got no time for that. No, just bring me a product.
Yep. I got a business to run.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for
joining us.
Kevin Toefel is one of the hosts of the IoT podcast and the founder of About Chromebooks. What are you covering about Chromebooks?
Anything related to Chrome OS and Chromebooks.
That I've covered the whole. That was a silly question, wasn't it?
The whole. Well, no. I mean, I've been focusing a lot on what's coming to Chrome and what new devices are coming. So I scour all the code commits that the Chromium team does and install Linux apps on my Chromebook to show people how it can be done. So there's a lot of great stuff going on in that space.
Well, Kevin, you've certainly helped me find the light to the Chromebook, so I appreciate that.
That's why I do it. All for you.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care. All right, I want to take a second to thank our sponsor of this show, IT Pro TV. If you have a team, no matter how small or big, and you want them to be trained up, check out IT Pro TV. A lot of what they do is what we do, but just more of a real IT career perspective. From CompTIA and Cisco to EC Council and VMware, IT Pro TV has you covered with over 4,000 hours of binge-worthy on-demand training, and new content is added daily. So you can stream IT Pro TV's courses live and on demand all over the world. You can use Chromecast, you can use your Roku, you can watch it through an Amazon Fire TV, you can watch it through your Apple TV, your PC, or on your iOS or Android app. So just fire up an app wherever you are, an iPad, an iPhone, a tablet, an Android phone, and then you can watch all this information and absorb it. So IT Pro TV recently updated their iOS and tvOS apps, which makes it really easy to view all of this content on vacation or on the go. So if you're eager to start a new career in IT, this isn't necessarily just for people who manage a team. If you feel like you want to up your skills, or even if you're just getting started, or if you're a seasoned pro, it's always a great time to get IT Pro TV. And if you manage a team, like I said, you can keep their skills up to date with interactive training that they'll actually enjoy watching. Gain full control over your team's training schedule and track your team's results via IT Pro TV's Pro Portal. You can also see metrics like logins, how often your team has viewed the videos, the courses they've viewed, the tracks that they've viewed, the tracks that they completed, and there's so much more. You can join more than 100,000 IT Pro TV members today. All you have to do is choose a plan, create an account, and enjoy the journey. And like I said, I promise a 7-day free. So we're not going to just make you sign up without checking out what you're going to be enjoying and learning from. Visit itpro.tv/knowhow. And that way you can learn more about IT Pro TV's team solution, and then you can request your free team trial. Or sign up for an individual monthly membership. You'll also get the free 7-day trial at itpro.tv/knowhow. You have to use the code KNOWHOW30, KNOWHOW30, and then you can receive 30% off your subscription for the lifetime of your active subscription. Standard subscriptions are normally $570 a year. Pay only $399, which is a lot less than $570, when you go to itpro.tv/knowhow. All you have to do is use the code KNOWHOW30. Flexible training, binge-worthy content, life-changing results. And we thank IT Pro TV for supporting this episode of Know How. All right, we have an email. Last week you talked about security systems.
Yep. Okay, so we've got an email from Jake. And so Jake is a police detective, and in his off time, he helps people set up DIY security systems just as a community service. He wrote us, "One of the security options I use is lights that come on when you arrive home after dark. If the system detects a intrusion, it will turn on all lights in the house, and if they choose to add it, an audio alarm. A bright house will scare off most intruders and will assist law enforcement when they arrive to a strange house so they can see what's taking place inside. Then I recommend a push-button medallion that will connect people of your choice to let them know you're in distress. This system is also nice to use LifeX Lite with, a smoke detector to turn red with fire and purple with gas detected in your home. So red when there's a fire and purple to tell you that there's carbon monoxide, I suppose, in your home. Connect that with IFTTT, so if smoke or CO2 is detected, it will unlock all doors for first responders or warn you not to enter your home. The new Samsung SmartThings app, I'm assuming that is what he's referring to, has limited these options, and hopefully they add them back in soon. So that is one thing about SmartThings that I've sort of been not too impressed with, is that the routines don't feel as fluid as they do on other platforms. So I will say, if you want to try and jury-rig your own sort of thing like this at home, a cost-effective way to do this would be to get the Abode system that we talked about last week, the one that has the built-in Zigbee Z-Wave hub. And if you want to get a pack of starter Philips Hue lights, you can use the Abode Smart Hub as the controller for the lights and then do all the automation through there. So any sirens that you have connected to the security system, any motion sensors, those are all directly integrated with the lights. If you can't afford the Philips Hue, maybe you don't want to spend all that money on those, you know, that premium name, Senglid lights, TP-Link lights would work just the same. They're a lot cheaper and they connect via Wi-Fi. And then you can add on whatever other sensors and things that you want that are compatible with that. So the Abode is really good for that because it offers that expandability and that ability to sort of add on as you like. Because really, the whole thing about DIY security is you do it yourself. Mm-hmm. Just whatever you want to do. There's got to be something for you out there to buy.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, first of all, like I love that you're doing this, Jake. It's awesome. Yeah. Like, he doesn't do this as, it's not a paid service. He just does it in his community. And, you know, most of, a lot of my IoT stuff is through HomeKit. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely, you know, have sensors that can turn on all your lights and things like that. And I recommend, you know, I said to Jake, well, do your, you know, the people in this community, do they have, you know, all they need is an iPad or an Apple TV or just some iOS device that stays at home and that can work as the hub. You don't need another hub. And he said, you know, this isn't the kind of neighborhood where people are just, you know, have their floors are covered with iPads and Apple TVs, which I totally get, which I love getting emails like that because it's like, oh yeah, you know, this is, that's not necessarily cost effective for most people. So those solutions that you came up with mm-hmm. are less expensive. Monoprice is another place where I've gotten lights and smart plugs. But yeah, I mean, I just think there are so many things that you can do. And I like what he said, that once the lights are on, that scares a lot of people away.
It does.
And yeah, I mean, because a lot of people especially are not that interested in having cameras on too. And cameras,
that's true.
Especially the subscription with cameras can be really not cost effective.
Cost prohibitive, in
yeah.
fact.
I mean, what are you, are like that off chance that you could catch someone? You don't necessarily yeah. need to see them. You just want them not to rob your house a yeah. lot of the time.
And as we talked about in last week's episode, a lot of these security systems, the Abode especially, comes with a built-in siren, and it's also got professional monitoring. So if you do want to pay for that, you don't want to pay for cameras, but you would like to have maybe an operator on the phone let you know when stuff is going on at home, that's a great solution. A lot of them offer easy. Abode in particular has a basic free tier and lets you pay as you need. So if you're going away for vacation, you could just pay for the time that you're away and that sort of thing. And because that's registered with your county or your city, the police will show up. So, you know, it's just really, the nice thing about this is you have the freedom to spend really as much money, but do plan to spend at least like $300 starting, I would say, just for a whole kit and getting things set up. I think that's about it.
All right. Well, yeah. If you have tips for us.
Or questions.
Yeah, tips or questions, you can send them right to megan@twit.tv, or you can find us both on Twitter. I'm at Megan Maroney on Twitter. And Florence is yes. oh that flow.
And Megan tells me everything. So
yeah,
you can
yeah.
email her and I'll
yeah.
find out.
If you have any questions,
it.
I take emails for Leo, I take emails for Jason, and I can take them for you too.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it.
And I guess that is it. We have wrapped
and
IoT.
That is that.
Yeah, IoT and the enterprise, wrapped a little bow around it.
I don't think we've wrapped the bow completely. We've left
no.
the bow kind of loose because it sounds like there's so much more that can really expand in this realm. And I think as this category grows in the next couple of years, we're going to see it become more mainstream in enterprise.
Mm-hmm. And if you're in charge of IT where you work, Send me an email, megan@twit.tv, if you have any stuff that has worked or if you have any stories to tell about how things that haven't worked or things that you've tried to get working or just questions that you have about something that will solve your problems. We want to hear it. megan@twit.tv, or you can find us both on Twitter. I am at Megan Maroney.
I am at Odette Flow.
And you should subscribe to the show.
Like and subscribe.
Yes, if you haven't already, we're available wherever fine podcasts are sold. And ours is sold for $0.00. So subscribe, twit.tv/KH. You can find all the ways to subscribe. And you can watch live. We usually, sometimes we record, I think next Thursday we'll be recording it live on Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific. So twit.tv/live. For that. And tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
And we'll see you next week.
Until next week.
This is Know How.